Uyku çok yapamış. All this can be conjectured. Then the conjecture to find state, right? The generalization of conjecture.
Thank you for the invitation to speak. So I'll talk about the triangulation conjecture. The first question raised about triangulations came from Poincaré in 1899. In a compliment to his analysis Cetus, he answered, asked and tried to answer the following question, can a differentiable manifold be described by gluing polyhedra? So, we all know that, for example, the torus can be described by taking a square and identifying the opposite sides. So Poincaré gave several constructions of manifolds. He was not very rigorous, but he described manifolds by local parametrizations and by zero sets of functions on Rn. And then he also described them by gluing polyhedra. So this was in analysis situs. And then later he asked himself the question, are these constructions, I mean, if you can describe it as a zero set, say, of some differentiable functions in Rn, can it also be described by gluing polyhedra? And he gave an incorrect proof. So things turned out to be much more complicated, but he didn't have all the rigorous definitions, but he was implicitly thinking about differentiable manifolds. So one way to phrase this question equivalently is every differentiable manifold triangulable, i.e., does it admit a homeomorphism to a simplicial complex? So these are equivalent because you can always split a polyhedron into simplices, in this case triangles. Of course, to make it a simplicial complex, you wouldn't want to have two different edges between the same vertex to itself. But you can always subdivide. For example, in this case, you can subdivide like this, and you can split it into smaller triangles, and then you get some sort of combinatorial object. It's just described by the set of vertices, and then which pairs of vertices are connected by an edge, and which triples of vertices have a triangle. So having such a triangulation would allow, for example, to compute the homology of the manifold easily in combinatorial terms. So Poincaré gave an incorrect proof, but in the end, the answer did turn out to be yes. So this was in 1940. It was proved by Cairns and Whitehead. So this is true for differentiable manifolds, but another question, which was raised, I think, for the first time by Knezer in 1924, is what if instead of differentiable manifolds you consider topological manifolds? So is every topological manifold triangulable? So by Knezer's time, things were getting more rigorous, and he actually had a definition of a topological manifold pretty much the same as we have today. And he thought the answer was yes. Well, and people for a while thought that the answer was yes, and this became known as the triangulation conjecture. However, at some point, it became clearer that the answer was likely to be no, and it turned out to be no. So the answer depends on the dimension. For n, well, it's yes. Let's say if we have dimension n, then it's yes. The answer is yes for n less or equal than 3. This is, well, for n less or equal than 1 is trivial, because we know how to classify such manifolds. For n equals 2 and n equals 3, people show that any topological manifold actually has a differentiable structure. This was done by Rado and Moisi in 1925 and 1952. But then the answer turned out to be no, and the first counterexample was found in dimension 4, so in the mid-80s, due to the work of Casson. So Casson used his his invariant to show that Friedmann's E8 manifold is not triangulable. And what I would like to talk about, so dimension 4 is kind of special. What I'd like to talk about today is the answer for n greater or equal than 5, and that's also no. So for each such n, there exist non-triangulable manifolds. And the proof has two very distinct, different in style parts. So the first one is due to Galuski, Stern, and independently Matsumoto from the 70s. And so what they did is they reduced this problem about high-dimensional manifolds to a problem in 3 plus 1 dimensions. And I will explain what high-dimensional manifolds have to do with cobordisms between 3 manifolds. And then what I did recently is solve this. So actually, I know very little about high-dimensional manifolds. I work in gauge theory and Flair homology, and this is the standard technique for studying cobordisms between 3 manifolds. And in fact, you can use Flair homology to solve the problem that they reduce this to. All right, so let's talk about the background first. So I want to explain the reduction to low dimensions. For this, I first have to talk about a related question. Which is, does every topological manifold have a combinatorial triangulation? I.e., a piecewise linear structure. The structure of a piecewise linear manifold. So what does this mean? I mean, a triangulation is already combinatorial. It's described in combinatorial terms, but people call these triangulations simplicial triangulations. The name combinatorial triangulation is reserved for triangulations in which the manifold structure is apparent. So what this means is that the links of simplices are spheres. So if we have a triangulation of course you can have a simplicial complex that's not a manifold, you could have things like this, but if it is a manifold, the simplest way in which it can be a manifold is one thing that you might expect is that if you have a vertex, you look at a neighborhood of that vertex and then you look at the boundary of that. Well, you expect the neighborhood to be a ball and then the boundary to be a sphere. So the green part is called the link of this vertex, and you expect that to be Sn minus 1. And in fact, also if you have a simplex of dimension k, you can define the link of the simplex to be, you look at, well, kind of similar, you look at a neighborhood of a point in here, a transverse neighborhood, and then the boundary of that, and you expect that to be Sn minus k minus 1. So if these conditions are true, then you say that, well, then this actually looks like a manifold. I mean, if you know that they are true, then it is a manifold, and this gives you a combinatorial triangulation or a piecewise linear structure for the manifold. So this question is actually easier than this one because it's easier to understand triangulations with nice properties.
How hard is it to get your head around an example that isn't, I would have, you know, held a gun to my head, I would have thought they were all of this sort.
Excellent question, yes. Until the 70s, no examples were known that were not of this form, but I will give an example where it's quite hard to find a non-combinatorial triangulation, and I'll get to that in a minute. Okay, so the answer is, again, to this related question, is that, well, yes, for n less or equal than 3, but then no, for n greater or equal than 5. So this was the first first interesting result in this direction was for n greater or equal than 5, and this was the work of Kirby Zibenmann. From 1969. So they show that there exists a unique obstruction to the existence of a piecewise linear structure on a manifold, the Kirby-Zibenmann invariant, which lives in H4 in the cohomology of M with Zima 2 coefficients. So to every topological manifold, they associate this element, and you can find a piecewise linear structure if and only if this element is zero. And I will explain what this element, kind of where it comes from. And it's also now for n equal to 4. This was done by Friedman. So he constructed the E8 manifold, and so first it was shown that it doesn't have a piecewise linear structure, and then using Casson you can show that it doesn't have any triangulation at all. And in dimension 4, I should say that in terms of obstructions, we still have this delta, but we also have some other obstructions coming from gauge theory. So in fact, in dimension 4, piecewise linear structures are the same as differentiable structures. And the difference between topological and differentiable structures in dimension 4 is, of course, very difficult. This is what gauge theory made some progress with, but it's still not completely understood. All right, so let me give an example of a non-combinatorial triangulation. The example starts with a homology sphere. So let Mn be a manifold such that, closed-oriented manifold, such that it has the same homology as the sphere, but pi 1 of M is non-trivial. So the typical example is the Poincaré sphere in dimension 3, but there are many others. And let's assume, in fact, this is always true, that we can triangulate M. So let's say it's a differentiable homology sphere. So we pick a triangulation. Then what we're going to do is we're going to take the suspension of M. That is, we're going to take two other points, and we're going to take the cones on all the on all the simplices in this triangulation. And this gives us the suspension of M. Now, the suspension of M is not a manifold, because if you look at the neighborhood of this vertex, well, and take out the vertex from the neighborhood, then you get something that has the homotopy type of M and is not simply connected. And that's not what happens in a manifold. In a manifold, if you take out a point from a neighborhood, it's still simply connected. So this is not a manifold. But interestingly, you can do this again. So pick two other points and take a double suspension. So you can look at sigma squared of Mn. And this turns out to be a manifold. In fact, it turns out to be homeomorphic to Sn plus 2. But this is a very difficult theorem. So this is due to Edwards and Cannon from the 70s. They construct such a homeomorphism explicitly, but it's rather complicated. If you believe that this is true, then now you got a non-combinatorial triangulation, because this whole thing is a sphere. However, if you look at V, the link of V is not a sphere. The link of V is just this suspension of M, which is not even a manifold. So that's the typical example. All right, so what we're interested in is whether there are manifolds that have that do not even have this kind of triangulations. So the next thing I want to talk about is the relation of this question to 3 plus 1 dimensions. Right. So the way it works, let's say we have a manifold M of dimension, of high dimension, n greater or equal than 5. And let's suppose that M is triangulated. So let's say that K is some triangulation of M. Let's define the following element. I think this was first defined by Sullivan. C of k is going to be the sum over all the simplices of k of dimension n minus 4 link of sigma times sigma. So this is an element in, well, I want to think of it as a chain. So it's a linear combination of simplices. It's going to be a chain of dimension n minus 4. In fact, it turns out to be a cycle, and I end up with an element in Hn minus 4 of M with coefficients in theta 3h. So I will explain in a moment what this is. The coefficients are given by the links of these simplices, and as I said, the links are what are they? If the triangulation were combinatorial, then the links would be three spheres, would be copies of S3. If it's not, you can still show that these are homology spheres. And theta 3H is a group made out of these homology three spheres. So theta 3H is the homology cobordism group. It's generated by closed oriented three manifolds with the same homology as S3. Modulo an equivalence relation, let me call them Y. Y0 is homology cobordant to Y1. Well, if there exists some four-manifold W from Y with boundary minus Y0 union Y1, such that this has the homology of S3 times an interval, which is the same as that of S3. So such that homologically, W is just like an interval. And this turns out to be a group, so the plus is the disjoint union, and minus is changing the orientation, and zero is just the class of the sphere, of the three sphere. So this is a group that's only interesting in dimension 3. In higher dimensions, it turns out that any homology sphere bounds a homology ball, and therefore all of them are kind of homology coordinate to the standard sphere, and the group is trivial. So this is why here we're focusing on simplices of codimension 4. All right, so this is an interesting group. It's kind of hard to understand what it is, but Fintuschl-Stern and Furuta showed in the 90s using gauge theory that theta 3H is in fact infinitely generated. It's an abelian group. Its structure is still not completely understood, so it's not known if it has any torsion, for example, or if it's a free abelian group, or if it's something like Q. Right. Okay, so one thing the simplest thing that was known about this group is that it's non-trivial, and this came from Rochlin, who constructed a Rochlin homomorphism mu from theta 3H to Z mod 2. This is given by as follows. You have a homology sphere, you can find a spin for manifold with boundary y, and mu is defined to be the signature of this manifold of W. So you look at the second homology of W, this has an intersection form, you take the signature and you divide by 8 and you look at that mod 2. And this turns out to be independent of W. And it gives you, you can show, for example, that mu of the Poincaré sphere is 1. And that's why, so the Poincaré sphere is not homology coordinate to S3, which has mu 0. All right, so coming back here, one thing we know is that, for sure, if K is combinatorial, if it's a combinatorial triangulation, then we know that C of K is 0. So C of K kind of captures some information about whether the triangulation is combinatorial or not. You're just looking at the simplices, at the links of codimension 4 simplices, and that their homology cobordism class. Okay, so the next thing I want to explain is the relation to the Kirby-Zibbermann invariant. So as I said, Kirby and Zibbermann show that that a combinatorial triangulation exists if and only if some element in the fourth cohomology of M vanishes. Notice that this is, well, at least if M is oriented, let's assume it's oriented, then this is the fourth cohomology of M by Poincaré duality with coefficients in theta 3H. Let's say oriented. Alright, so what we can do is look at the following short exact sequence. Consider the map mu the Rochlin homomorphism from theta 3H to zima 2, and then take its kernel. So this is still a complicated group. Now, if we have a short exact sequence of a billion groups, we get a long exact sequence in cohomology. And let's see, so we have, if we look at H4 of M with values in theta 3H, and we basically apply this homomorphism to every link, we get a map to H4 of M zima 2. And then the next term in the sequence is H5 of M with values in the kernel of mu. And this is related by a map delta. This is the Bachstein homomorphism. Okay, so this comes naturally out of this. So now let me just tell you some facts. The Kirby-Siebermann invariant, delta of M, is nothing else than, in this case, the mu of C of K. And it lives in here. So this is if M admits a triangulation K. So the Kirby-Siebermann invariant is defined for all the manifolds, but when you actually have a triangulation, this is perhaps the simplest definition of it. You just look at the links of codimension 4 simplices, and you move them by, and you see what they do under the Rochlin homomorphism. And this gives you an element in H4 of M Zimat 2. And what Kirby and Siebermann tell you is that this element is zero if and only if, well, if and only if you can change K so that it becomes combinatorial. Right? So if K was combinatorial, then this element here is already zero. If the image is zero, then you can change it and you do have some combinatorial triangulation. Okay. Now, more importantly, if M is triangulable, if M has any triangulation at all, then what you get from here is this is an exact sequence. You get that little delta, the Bachstein of delta M is equal to zero. So this is an obstruction. So the image of the of big delta under little delta is an obstruction to the existence of any triangulation. Interestingly, so Galinsky, Stern, and Matsumoto they show that the converse is also true. So M is triangulable if and only if delta of delta M is equal to zero. All right. So now the only question is, are there any manifolds M such that delta of M is equal to zero? Well, one thing that this is not going to happen is if this short exact sequence happens to split. So if this splits, if a short exact sequence splits, then what happens is that the connecting homomorphisms in the associated long exact sequence are zero. Then delta of delta M is always zero for any M. So then all manifolds would be triangulable. But actually, what also Galuski, Stern, and Matsumoto showed was another thing, that there exists a triangulable manifolds, manifold of any dimension, let's say n dimension greater or equal than 5, if and only if this short exact sequence does not, non-triangulable, if I phrase it like this, if this does not split. So the converse is also true. Yes, maybe I should say one word about the converse. So if star does not split, then what they found is they found an M. Well, you can construct, it's not too hard to find an M, such that, well, a little bit hard, such that the first Steenrod square of delta M is non-zero. The first Steenrod square is an operational cohomology, is given by the connecting homomorphism, where instead of this, you look at the group Z mod 4, and it's mapped to Z mod 2. And if you have something like this, and this short exact sequence does not split, then then you can show that the Bachstein for Z mod 4 being non-zero implies that the Bachstein for this one is non-zero. This is just some algebra, so this would imply that delta of delta M is non-zero. I will give an example in a minute.
This
question about triangle, so their work reduces this question about to something about theta 3H and this Rochlin homomorphism to Z mod 2. And the question of splitness, so the question remained what if there exists a map like this, so does there exist, what does it mean for this to split? You want something in the image of Z mod 2, so you want some element, let's say Y in theta 3H, so the class of some homology sphere, such that mu of y is 1. And furthermore, y has to be in the image of Z mod 2. That means that 2 times y is equal to 0 in theta 3H, which is the same as saying that y plus y is homology cobordant to S3. Or is the same as saying that y is homology cobordant to minus y. Okay, so the theorem that that I'm going to talk about is that such a Y does not exist. So this is a result purely in low-dimensional topology. And it implies that the manifold that they constructed with, so Galuski and Stern gave an explicit example of M5 with SQ1 of delta M is non-zero, is non-triangulable. So their example is kind of complicated. So let me give an example that's even more complicated, but somehow it's easier to describe if you just assume all of Mike Friedman's work. So here's an example of a non-triangulable manifold. Of dimension 5. So Mike Friedman constructed a fake CP2 plus CP2 bar. So this is a, let's call this X. This is a four manifold with delta non-zero. So it's not piecewise linear. So that's so it's not smooth. So he constructed this topological four manifolds that are not smooth, and it has intersection form. So H2 has intersection form the same as CP2 plus CP2 bar, namely 1, 0, 0, minus 1. And furthermore, this intersection form is equivalent to its negative. So one thing that also follows from Friedman's work is that there exists a homeomorphism from x to minus x. an orientation reversing homeomorphism. And well, the manifold M is just the mapping torus of F. So you look at X, you take X times an interval, and then you glue it back to itself via this map F. You can check basically the SQ1, so delta M is non-trivial, is 1, SQ1 of it corresponds to coupling with the Wu class, which is this circle, and you get that it's non-trivial. So this is kind of a posteriori example. I guess it was suggested to me by Peter Kronheimer after Friedman's work. And so it follows from this that it's non-triangulable, and then you can find examples in higher dimensions. You can just multiply with a torus, and this is still non-triangulable. So I guess this concludes the background part. Now I want to focus on, saying a few words about the proof of this theorem. So proof that there is no Y, a homology sphere, three sphere, with mu of Y is 1, and Y is homology coborden to minus Y. So the idea is to construct a lift of the Rochlin homomorphism to Z. So there's it's an old idea, and so what we're going to have is we're going to have a map from theta 3H to Z. And interestingly, this is not a homomorphism. But it's still some map, such that beta mod 2 is mu. We just need two properties. This one and that beta of minus y is minus of beta y. Right, so if we have such a beta, then if we had the y with the properties above, then y is homology coborden to minus y would imply that beta of y is beta of minus y, which is minus beta of y. And if beta now takes values in z instead of z mod 2, then this implies that beta of y is equal to 0. And if we have the other property that says that beta mod 2 is equal to mu, that implies that mu of y is equal to 0. So if you construct a lift of the Rochlin homomorphism to Z, then automatically all the two torsion elements must have Rochlin equal to 0. Okay, so question is, how do we find beta? So beta is constructed. Beta comes from something called Pintu equivariant. Seiberg-Wittenflur homology. So it's not surprising that gauge theory says something about these kind of questions, because gauge theory studies four manifolds and smooth four manifolds. And oh, I forgot to mention, when I defined theta 3h, I forgot to say that W has to be piecewise linear or alternatively smooth. So for two manifolds to be, there is always a topological a cobordism between the two, homology cobordism between the two, but what you're interested in is whether there is a piecewise linear or equivalently a smooth homology cobordism between them. And to study smooth four manifolds, gauge theory is the main game in town. So the construction of beta is modeled on an older construction, on some previous work of Froyshov. So Froyshov defined an invariant, he called it H, but let me call it delta, from theta 3H to Z. His is actually a homomorphism, but it doesn't have the property that delta mod 2 is mu. So delta mod 2 is not mu. But so this was about 10 years ago. So he actually, he constructed the first such homomorphism. And one thing it shows, for example, is that theta 3H has a Z subgroup. And the construction this is defined using the more traditional S1 equivariant. Seibert-Wittenflier homology. So let me say a few words about these Flier homologies. The main properties, the main property that we will need Flier homology is something that you associate to a three-manifold. Usually you also need some extra data, such as spin C structure, but I won't get into that. So this is an abelian group, and the construction is functorial under cobordisms. So if we have a cobordism, any cobordism from any smooth cobordism, from y0 to y1, and there are various versions, so s1 or pin2. What we get is a map from SWFH, let's say of s1 equivariant to SWF, s1 equivariant of y1, possibly with a shifting grading. This is a map that depends on the cobordism, and they glue nicely. If you glue along connected three manifolds, then the maps compose. So it's part of some sort of TQFT. And this is why, when it's a module, since it's an equivariant group, it's automatically a module over the cohomology of a point, the equivariant cohomology of a point, which is the cohomology of its classifying space. So, let me show. In the S1 case, so let me draw two pictures. G equals S1, and G equals P2. Pardon?
What are the coefficients?
Yes, you can do any coefficients you want. The simplest thing is to work with Zeeman 2 coefficients. So let's just do that. So let F be the field with two elements. So in the S1 case, this is the cohomology of CP infinity, which is just f of u, a single variable u, which lives in degree 2. In this case, you can consider the cohomology of BP in 2, this turns out to be f of two variables, q and v, modulo q cubed, so q cubed equals 0, and q lives in degree 1, and v lives in degree 4. All right, so the... okay, I still have a little bit of time to explain this, so... in this case, the Seiberg-Witten floor homology, and I'm only going to talk about the case when B1 of y is equal to 0. In fact, I might as well just focus on homology spheres. So when it's a homology sphere, one can show that the S1 equivariant homology, it's made of an infinite part and a finite part. So we could have something like this. The infinite part consists of a tail, so there is an action of u, and some generators are related by this action. Okay, and basically the infinite tail comes from the equivariant cohomology of a point, which comes from a reducible solution to the Seiberg-Witten equations, and this comes from all the irreducible solutions. Similarly here, instead of an infinite tail like this, we have an infinite tail, so an infinite tail of the form FFF, 0, FFF, 0, and so on, and another FFF, 0. And then we also have some finite stuff. Okay, so this is the chain complex. And now we also have differentials. So we could have differentials like this. Various of these irreducibles and, I mean, various of these generators are connected by differentials. So when we take homology, you take the kernel, the Mander image, and some of the elements cancel, and you are left with a smaller homology group. Okay, so the interesting thing is that there is a way of assigning a grading to Fleur homology such that the bottom element here is in grading congruent to 2 mu mod 4, where mu is the Rochlin invariant. So it's either 0 or 2 mod 4. So the definitions of the Froyshov and the beta invariants are as follows. Let D be the minimal degree of the U tail in homology. Then the Froyshov invariant is D mod 2. And what happens is that, well, the bottom element, let me tell you on the, so this is Froyshov. And the Pinto invariant beta is defined as b minus 1 over 2, where b is the minimal degree of the middle tail in Pinto homology. So the v action actually is, it goes like this, and there is a middle, there are basically three tails, and the middle, and we're looking at the middle one, and we normalize beta to be b minus 1 over 2. So what happens is that the grading mod 2 in the complex is automatic, gets you the Rochlin invariant, but here, because of this cancellation, and because you only know that it's periodic mod 2, you have no relation between delta and mu. So this is unrelated to mu. Whereas this beta, by contrast, the fact that this cohomology group is 4-periodic rather than 2-periodic shows you that b minus 1 over 2 is always congruent to mu mod 2. Basically, b is 2 mu plus 1 mod 4. So when you subtract 1 and divide by 2, you get mu mod 2. So this makes the PIN2 homology better in terms of relation to the Rohlin invariant. And finally, what you have to show is to use the using the TQFT properties of the Seiberg-Witten, I mean, the behavior under cobordisms, you get to show that both delta and beta descend to theta 3H. And then the last thing to check is, of course, what happens under orientation reversal, that beta of minus y is minus of beta of y. So this basically is the construction of beta. So I think I'll stop here. Yes, absolutely. So one question is that might be actually doable. I mean, I've been thinking about it, but I can't solve it yet. Is so right now the obstruction to triangulation is in H5 of M with values in the kernel of mu. But this is a complicated group. Conjecturally, the obstruction should live in H5 of M with integer coefficients. And this would be true, that these obstructions are equivalent, if and only if you can show that there exists no torsion in theta 3h with mu equals 1. So, well, so far we just showed that there's no 2 torsion, but if you can show that there's no torsion at all, then you would get a simpler obstruction to that. And that might actually be doable. And of course, the other important question is to classify triangulations up to an equivalence relation, concordance, and then, they are classified by elements of H4 of M with values in ker mu. So if you really want to understand triangulations, you have to really understand the kernel of mu. In other words, you have to understand the structure of theta 3H. And right now we have a few maps from theta 3h to z, and we have a few more invariants of Intrusional and Stern, but that's still very far from actually understanding all of theta 3h.